Here we stand. This is your host, Evan Annett. Welcome. And today, you might have noticed in the news, if you've been following it, that for some reason, Jorge Bergoglio, a.k.a. Pope Francis, didn't have his big splash appearance at the World Council of Churches. As a matter of fact, the issue wasn't even reported anywhere. There was, however, a spin story put out by the Vatican that the Pope had suffered a, quote, fall, and that he might be suffering health issues. Well, here's the real reason it, none of that was reported. And you can follow this in the four latest postings at ITCCF, or in the two, if you go to the last two, it tells you what happened, and that's, in summary, the following. On Thursday, June 21st, Pamela sheriffs armed with a standing arrest warrant confronted and temporarily restrained Pope Francis as he approached the Ecumenical Center, where he was scheduled to address delegates of the World Council of Churches. After a brief scuffle between the arresting sheriffs and Vatican security, the Pope was released and rushed into a waiting vehicle. Two of the sheriffs were heavily beaten and detained by the Vatican agents and then arrested by Geneva police. And if you go to the second posting at ITCCS.org, you'll see the actual report of the team, what happened. When you attempted, in the wake of that attempted arrest, the Vatican has released a cover story claiming that the Pope might be suffering from health issues, not elaborating at all. And in fact, today, the Pope imposed a complete, and the Vatican imposed a complete media blackout on everything that's happened over the last few days. Now, the important thing is that the planned Ninth Circle sacrificial ceremony for that evening was canceled, and our sources tell us, sources from the Vatican say they have not been rescheduled because all of the confrontation that happened at that event. And it was also reported that one of the reasons the Pope was in Geneva was to block legislation that would have prevented the Vatican Bank and other private commercial banks from continuing to lend money in Switzerland. And so there was this other reason why he was there. But people have been asking, what's happened to the common law sheriffs in the wake of that? Now, if you go to the latest posting at ITCCS, or there was a communique that came again out of the ITCCS office in Brussels. And here's the summary of what it says. The four common law sheriffs have been released. Two of them were quite badly beaten, pistol whipped by the Vatican security. The four common law sheriffs have been flown to an undisclosed location to be debriefed and to look at the film they have of the event. Now, two of these common law sheriffs will be laying charges against the Vatican employees who beat them, and they will be third-partying the Pope Francis, Jorge Bergoglio, to appear in court because he's the officer responsible for these thugs who assaulted our common law sheriff, and he bears ultimate responsibility. So there'll be a lawsuit coming against Bergoglio in person because of this. And the other really interesting thing is that the source in the Vatican tells us that people there are in a panic. They may even cancel future papal visits because here's the net effect of what we did. Disrupted his appearance at the World Council of Churches. It's questionable whether he even spoke to the entire event. We prevented the Ninth Circle of the ceremony from occurring, and it hasn't been rescheduled. We're now with their backs to the wall. They're very concerned about any other future appearances by the Pope anywhere, including the big one in Ireland at the end of August, which there will also be an attempt there to, again, enforce the common law arrest warrant and arrest him for proven crimes against humanity, of which he was convicted in 2014. Now, please follow the work, ITCCF.org. And before we go to our interview with Bob Hansen, West Coast journalist in Canada, two other things to follow at ITCCF.org. The proof that William Coombs, the eyewitness to the abduction of 10 children by Queen Elizabeth, his murder at St. Paul's Hospital, has been confirmed now by a nurse who handled him on the last day of his life. And that nurse confirms that his symptoms all indicated arsenic poisoning, not the bogus cause of death, tuberculosis, which the BC coroner has put out. And finally, and we'll be going into this next week, July 1st, so-called Canada Day, the release of the case for a sovereign republic in Canada. That'll be the subject of next week's show. We hope you enjoy the show today with Bob Hansen. We'll be addressing these and other issues. Tune in again live next week. Follow work, itccs.org, murderbydecree.com, and please spread the word of the latest postings of how we have won. We've proven today, again, in the last few days, the success of taking direct action in the name of the common law. The backs are to the wall. We are making progress, people. So enjoy the show. We'll be back next week. Stay strong. Stay clear. Thank you.
Whirlwinds of danger are racing around us. Overwhelmed forces of darkness prevail. Still in the fight, see advancing before us. Red flag of liberty that yet shall prevail. Then all of you workers fighting.
Let it be known that British liberties are not the grants of princes or parliaments.
That many of our rights are inherent and essential. Agreed on as maxims and established as preliminaries even before Parliament existed. We have a right to them, derived from our Maker. Our forefathers have earned and bought liberty for us at the expense of their ease, their estates, their pleasures, and their blood.
Liberty is not built on the doctrine that a few nobles have a right to inherit the earth. No! No!
It stands on this principle that the meanest and lowest of the people are, by the unalterable, indefeasible laws of God and nature, as well entitled to the benefit of the air to breathe, light to see, food to eat, and clothes to wear as the nobles or the king. That is liberty. And liberty will reign in America.
And liberty shall reign in Canada and England and Ireland and wherever you're listening, wherever we enact it. This is Here We Stand. We're back. I'm your host, Kevin Annett, once again. We're here every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific. Follow us, itccs.org, and pick up the cause of liberty wherever you are, folks. The quote from Thomas Paine comes to mind every day for me. He says, "We have it in our power to begin the world again." He wrote that at a low moment, when the American Revolution was collapsing in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, Christmas of 1776. And yet they carried on, and it's that inspiration that carries us on today as well. We do have the capacity to begin the world again. And yet so many people cannot imagine a new world. Our eyes, our hearts, our minds are riveted on the present. I just had experience of that this last week when I was meeting with yet another group that wanted to convene a common law court. And I remember one man getting up in it and saying, "Well, if we create this on our own, what's going to make it legitimate? What's going to make it legal? The fact of doing it makes it legitimate. Enough people do it, it becomes the law, it becomes reality." It's something we have to learn in practice according to the three maxims of the natural law. All things are held in common because they're given to us by creation as a common garden. No one has authority over anyone else without their consent. And we're to live in peace, which does not mean the absence of conflict, of course. Conflict and change are inherent in the natural order. Peace means harmony, harmony with the natural law within ourselves and in the world. Those three principles guide everything we do. Our effort now on this show to reclaim our world, our hearts and our minds, our politics, our spirituality. And on that note, today, our theme, which you can follow, if you follow our work at itccs.org, you'll notice the topic of the show today is the crime scene called Canada, Taking Back the Nation. Well, I've got with me today, and he'll be on in just a few minutes, Bob Hansen. He's a West Coast activist. He's a journalist with CHLY Radio in Nanaimo, which is very much the crime scene, the heart of the crime. And we're going to talk a lot about that today, not just the historic crime of genocide, but the ongoing, what I call the octopus, the three-headed monster of church, state, and corporation, that not only wiped out most of the native people here, but continues to wipe out a lot of our people. And Bob will be with us in a moment. I also have some news items. You people might have noticed that there was a thing in the news today about a police crackdown in Saginaw County, Michigan. Police raided the home of Bishop Joseph Sistone because he wouldn't cooperate in a grand jury investigation into child trafficking and abuse in the Catholic Church. Turns out Sistone was present when a lot of documents were shredded with the names of the priests and those harming children. Well, what is not mentioned is that there was in Saginaw County, which is just north of Flint, Michigan, one of our Flint common law action groups was in the process of organizing and training, and they announced locally that they were in the process of, they were going to perform citizen arrests on known child raping priests. Next thing we know, the police themselves are raiding Bishop Sestoni's residence. There's a fire lit under their ass. They knew they had to act. So this is what we're talking about, people. We take the action the authorities have to follow. The honest elements and the cops and the system, they follow our lead. And that's the answer to that man who said, well, what makes it legitimate? Us doing it. We set the pattern, brothers and sisters. So that's an example. And there'll be more of that we'll be getting into. I've got other announcements, but I noticed Bob is already standing by, so I want to bring him on now. Hello, Bob. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing really well. And I wanted to let you kind of introduce yourself a little bit. And as part of the discussion today, I wanted to start with a discussion of my latest book, At the Mouth of a Cannon, which talks about, as I call it, the octopus on the west coast of Canada that's been consuming the land and the people here. I know you've read it recently. You had some remarks and thoughts about that. Do you want to just kick off with that?
Sure enough. Am I speaking at a volume that's adequate for you there?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay, so, yeah, I read your book. It's excellent, Kevin. It's concise and it's clear, and you've got it backed up solidly, so I've been thinking a lot about it. It's such an important historical story that it really should go to grade 12s in high school as part of the curriculum for reading. You can't get away from this problem. It's huge. And I don't think we can have a country that's functional until we solve this issue that's historical and even present. It's present right now. You know, you hear the adage or the metaphor of people are like fish swimming in water. Like, does a fish know it's in water? And that's our problem right now. Is that, for example, with the open net fish farms and Kinder Morgan pipelines, these are all violations of First Nations treaty rights. So what we've got going here right now is white-collar genocide, and your book gives us a perfect history, beginning with the Vatican, the Catholic Church in Europe, and their doctrines, 1493, that if you're not a Christian, particularly Catholic, that you're not really a human, and they would kill people regularly if they didn't convert to Christianity. And yet, you know, your statements about the three levels of personhood in the book, that staggers me.
Yeah.
And can you just review those three? Because that's really important, the part that our driver's license or other kinds of ID for the government are in capital letters, and we've heard this before, but this is where it comes from, is it comes from the Catholic Church and their doctrines.
Well, you know, they say all roads lead to Rome. In this case, and I'm glad you mentioned that in the book, because the historical background for this genocide is really important.
It's huge, and it touches on Greek society, too. So it's our culture. It's our foundation of our present culture, and we've got to change it.
And that term you referred to, Capitis Diminutio Maxima,
yes.
It was a Latin term meaning, under Roman law, you didn't have any inherent standing. You were given a status. And what it means is, if you were a slave and you had no family status, no inherent rights within society or anything, you were in a state of abject subjugation. You could be killed at a whim of anyone, and you were entitled. And this is interesting because the word name comes from a Hebrew word meaning a plaque that you hang around the head of a slave. Your name is literally a plaque hung over you to say who owns you. And I find that, I think I mentioned to you that it's funny because in the Bible, when somebody says to God, who are you? God says, I have no name. I am who I am. That's the natural law speaking.
Right.
And whereas this name given to us under the law, Capitis Diminutio Maxima, a slave was all capitalized. This is a corporation. It may look like a human being, but it's actually a thing that you own. And that, on your birth certificate, your driver's license, that's who you are. They're not referring to you as a flesh and blood Bob Hansen. They're referring to the corporation made that they own you through. And as long as you buy into the system and answer to that, you're their legal slave. So
well,
that's important to know.
It's huge. Yeah. And the phrase that you used in one part of the book was that the First Nations had to enfranchise themselves. Like, that's a staggering statement. And that they would give up their land and all their traditional cultural elements because they would then become Christian. And that was the cost of receiving Christianity. Like, blow me out of the water on this one. This is crazy talk. And yet, it exists today. When the war criminal, Stephen Harper, the previous Prime Minister of Canada, before he led the bombing mission of Libya, which was a war of choice in a country that had no violent actions against any of the treaty members in NATO or any Western power at the time, Canada led the bombing mission. But before Harper okayed that process, he went personally to the Pope in Europe and had a visit with the Pope. Like, that's staggering, because this is the depth of the Catholic Church's influence in Canadian politics to this very day. And when you look at the history of the Catholic Church, you do not want them involved with our politics in any way. The way they conducted themselves during the Second War in Europe, favoring the Nazis and being up on the dais with Nazi leaders in various communities, they were administrators of the Ustasi in Croatia that killed thousands and thousands of Serbians, Roma people.
Three quarters of a million.
And they had this insane attitude. They bragged about it, actually, because they got the permission right from the Pope to do all this, and they funded it from the gold that they stole from the Serbs and others who would not convert.
Right.
But they bragged that they would
Kill a third, convert a third, deport a third.
That's right.
Interesting, same ratio that it was inflicted in the residential schools in Canada. A third to half died consistently over half a century.
Well,
not an accident. Yeah.
No, well, I think it's corporate policy, and the church is a corporation, likely the oldest corporation on the planet for the Western world. We have to think about that. And what is a corporation? It's a mindless, heartless, soulless entity that has one objective only. If it's a political party, that objective is to get into power at all costs. It's not to serve the electorate like you and me, Kevin, when we vote. It's to get power and then do what the people who got you into that position to achieve power do what they want. So in Canada in particular, we have a very dysfunctional democracy. And part of that legacy is the input from the Christian churches here at the West Coast. And that's why having a resolution to that history, so-called reconciliation, perhaps, or not, but we must include cleaning up the history and getting some kind of process to put the Christian churches on the docket for having done this, because this is a crime against humanity, and it was premeditated, and it was premeditated for personal benefit and the benefit of the Catholic and other Christian churches at the West Coast.
Well, I want to get into that. As a matter of fact, we're going to, as the program progresses, I want to move towards talking about solutions and actions we can take now. And before that, Bob, I wanted any other observations you had about the book, The Mouth of a Cannon. Did something grab you? Did it leap out at you and really speak to you from that book?
I think it was cruelty, frankly. Could it be the only word when you're treating children the way the church did with the residential schools? The fact they specifically targeted young girls who were blue blood, you might say, in the Western term. They were of the lineage of the hereditary chief families. And we have a lot of matriarchal cultural in First Nations here at first contact. And so they were particularly hard on those young girls. Harriet Mahaney, that you spoke of in the book, who died protesting essentially against the expansion of the Sea to Sky Highway into Whistler in preparation for the Olympics here in British Columbia. She was thrown in jail at the age, in her mid-70s approximately, and then perished just a couple weeks after because she caught a lung infection, I believe. And, and she was treated horribly in the schools, and we have in Nanaimo a hospital, a residential hospital, and you talk about that incredible depth of human depravity against children. There's no other way to describe it. These are crimes against humanity. Earl McKenna, who was a traditional chief on the coast of the Ahauvit Nation, which were really resistive to the Christian missionaries. They were one of the last holdouts, very strong-headed, strong-willed culture. And Earl did send one of his children, a girl, who would be a hereditary leader, to the school, and she was killed in a fire. And I guess there were some people who were there and had other things to say than this fellow who was the leader of the school at the time, Mr. Ross.
John Ross,
and,
yeah.
John Ross, and the church immediately absolved him of all guilt, I think before mm-hmm. there was even any investigation. And the point being that, though, he left really quickly after that, and I have no doubt why.
Yeah.
Because
well,
Earl
that's
McQuinn,
interesting. The characters, one of the reasons I wrote this book, Bob, was because it was the issue that got me fired at the United Church, but it's really, it genocide is about theft, ultimately, stealing identity, stealing lives, stealing land. And this John Ross, his son, grandson, Hamilton Ross, is the one who got all the land from the United Church 50 years later.
That's
like
bizarre.
Ross moves away, but then his own family grabs the land, sells it off to McMillan Bloedel, and I find out about this. I write a letter about it. I'm out on my can because I stumbled over this big land deal.
Totally.
So I'm working with the grandson of the McQuinna chief, and my opposition is the descendants of this John Ross. It's like all in the family, right? Doesn't
right.
change.
Right.
Quite
well,
astounding.
Well, you know, these types of crimes are really an organized criminal endeavor. There's no doubt about it. And it's not a coincidence that the family ended up with the land, at, you know, two generations later. They just waited for the dust to settle somewhat. But you know what? You came along and blew that dust back up into the air, and now we're looking at it again. And, you know, as I said at the outset, this book is so clearly written and so well backed up, it really should be required reading for high school. And I think the one thing that really bothered me was this cruelty to the children with such a high death rate in such a short order. I read the book. It's easy to read. I think it was a better part of an afternoon. And then that night, and I woke up in the morning, and it was agonizing for a while. I just thought, you know what? I don't want to be a part of this country called Canada, these territories. Something is vitally wrong here when we let this... We had it happen, and then we haven't done anything to correct the problem. And I'm not concerned about who is chief now and what the people who, on First Nations who say they want done with that or not, because it's, now that I see how blown apart their governance structure and their culture is, I go back to square one and say, who am I really trying to protect here? And it's justice for these children who were murdered, and that's the best thing. And when you start looking at it, be damned if solving this kind of problem of a historical nature resolves so many issues of our current times. Like you call it the octopus, it's so true. You know, we have a fascist country in Canada, and the church, the Catholic Church, has been a fascist environment for a long time, like 60 or 80 years at least. I think their whole culture is fascist, frankly, being a corporation themselves, meaning that everything is okay that they do as long as it promotes the church. So we have a struggle in front of us now. If we want this country to be truly a democracy and representative and a meritocracy, including First Nations and respect for their culture, then we have to deal with the Catholic Church and the other Christian churches. They cannot be immune from the law. They cannot
be pedophilia. Right now they're effectively immune. We've seen that. We've seen how they were absolved by this absurd Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which didn't even allow evidence entered. If you were a TRC commissioner, you could not enter down as evidence anything referring to the death of a child in a residential school. Can you believe that?
I remember when I first saw that as part of their conditions, and I just almost dropped the paper. Like that was like a non-starter at that point, completely.
Yeah.
And you've nailed that. And you've got Justice Murray Sinclair, I believe his name is, got him identified as saying that they didn't want to do anything too harsh because it might be a financial difficulty for the Catholic Church. I mean, give me
I mean, it's absurd. And what you said about fascism and the Catholic Church, I remember a quote from Pope Pius XXII, who's the one who signed the Concordat with Hitler. They were the first power on earth to recognize Nazi Germany. And Pius said, fascism is simply the social teachings of the church enacted.
Wild.
Right?
I totally believe that. And they're just, they're a fish in dirty water that they don't know they're in, frankly. They don't care
right.
either. It's such a fraud. It's incredible. What they carried on in Eastern Europe in this area called the Intermaria, Marium, rather, and that's between the Baltic Sea and the Black Sea. That's what Latin means, between the two seas, Intermarium. And it's a process that they wanted to have a buffer zone between the Soviet Union at the time and Eastern Europe because the communists were atheistic. And so long before the war even began, the Second War, the church had Jesuit spies operating in the Soviet Union. The church has been a political economic instrument, like you say, a fascist instrument, for centuries.
Yep.
It's crazy when you step back and look at it and see the pattern. And that, by the way, is the Achilles heel of corporations, is that you talk about Ross on the island here, where he killed these First Nations and got the land into his family's possession over two generations. Well, you see it over two generations, right? And this is the thing with a corporation. It's kind of like tracking a submarine by satellite using lasers, because the submarine causes the water above it in the ocean to rise only a quarter of an inch or so, because it's pushing water underneath, right? And nope, you wouldn't ever see that by your naked eye. But because of computing and with lasers, even on a rough sea, a fair, you know, an average ocean type of water on the surface, they can see that rise and track the sub. And this is what tracking corporations' dark deeds are going to be like as we do, I would say, a forensic audit of the last 300 or 400 years of corporate activity on this planet.
Well, and you know, talking about the first corporation and the reach of the Catholic Church, I don't even like using the term. It's more neurolinguistic programming, because Catholic means universal, and it's not a universal church. It's a cult. It's a Roman emperor cult. It's not, it doesn't have Christ as head of the church, but a man, the Pope or their emperor. So that's important. But I remember telling you an anecdote once. When I got ordained in May 1990 up in Naramata, B.C., we're all standing there, us smiling ordinands, you know, very proud to be wearing our robe finally. And I looked down at the ordination certificate, and it said that I was part of the United Church of Canada, a part of the Holy Catholic Church.
Subdivision.
And I said, hold on a minute. Stop. Everyone stop. What is this? And they said, oh, you don't have to worry. That means universal. And I said, no, it's got a capital C on it. And what I finally figured out was that as a creation of the Canadian government, the United Church of Canada, formed by an act of Parliament in 1925 to Christianize and Canadianize the heathen, and that was one of their stated goals, they were created by the Crown of England, which is, as we know, a subsidiary of Rome, the Church of Rome. And so all these roads lead back there. And we are, right when the residential school stuff began to blow open because of the work I was doing, there was a meeting in Ottawa between the Catholic, Anglican, United Churches to coordinate their legal strategy, and they then began to lobby the government about the need to keep any mention of deaths out of the media, buy off people with gag orders and out-of-court settlements. They engineered it with the government as early as 1998, right after we did our first tribunal about this. So it's very insidious, the whole thing, and that's one of the reasons I wrote the book.
Well, it's timely. It's hugely timely. We've got, as I say, Kinder Morgan, Open Pen Fish Farm still, Site C Dam. All of these projects, huge projects, have no consent from First Nations that's valid. And so they're dangerous, technologically speaking. One of them, Site C, is not even, doesn't even yet have a true purpose. It's like we've got a crazy drunken captain at the helm of our ship here, making no sense at all and just taking us head on into the storm, the economic weather that's turning against us.
And good analogy.
Yeah, and so here we have now beginning to see this light of how this structure works between corporations, politicians, and, yep, the Christian churches. I would never have thought that they had the clout in Canada that they do. I myself went to the United Church of Canada. I was a choir boy for a while when I was little. My parents pulled me out when the Sunday school talked about Moses being put in a basket and in the river to avoid the Romans. And I came home and said, "Dad, who are the Romans?" And they saw I was upset. I'm like, "Well, what's the matter?" And I said, "Well, they were killing little baby boys, you know." And my parents talked that over for a while, and then they pulled me out of Sunday school.
Yeah.
And yet, that's the kind of, you say cult, it's a psychopathic mentality, and I think it's generational. And it's a drunken kind of carelessness and power, a thirst and hunger for power, absolute power, emperor's power. Emperor means absolute.
Well, so, that quote about absolute power corrupts absolutely, Lord Acton in England was referring to the Vatican when he was talking about that.
Well, there's another one that tacks right onto it, and that is, when you corrupt an institution, you institutionalize corruption.
Exactly.
No,
and
that's
I wanted to talk about that too before. And you mentioned First Nations in BC, in Canada. That, of course, is a term. That's a corporate designation. The term First Nations came out of Ottawa in the 1990s.
It was a wandering.
Well, it refers to like when in the treaty process these days. And I want to talk about that. The role of the chiefs, because that was another theme in my book At the Mouth of a Cannon, how this divide and conquer has created a new native elite who are actually working against their people.
Yeah,
and
that's our politicians. That's the Western system, is it not? That's the core of the Western system of what so-called democracy or governance anyway. And then they say, of course, silence is consent. So when you speak out, they clobber you.
Right.
You know, like, this is such a corrupt, dysfunctional ideology of governance. Let's put it that way. You know, it's based on an empire, both either the Holy Roman or the Catholic Church, and also kingdoms. You know, we still have this crazy monarchy in Great Britain.
Oh,
the British are thrilled with it, but, you know, that's a hugely dysfunctional family. There's no doubt about it. And the whole system just is crazy class structure. And people lap it up over there.
Mentioned voting and how in Canada, in fact, to vote is an act of treason because the oath of the Member of Parliament is, "I swear true allegiance and loyalty to Queen Elizabeth II and her descendants, period. Not to the people of Canada, not to the Constitution." So you're signing your authority away when you mark that ballot. You're given authority to the servants of a foreign power, criminally convicted power. I want to eventually, in the next 10 or 15 minutes, I want to get into the whole theme of what is an alternative, what would a republic look like in Canada, how we build it. And it's kind of a good jumping off point from the book, At the Mouth of a Cannon, because the point is raised, you know, what do we do with the octopus here? They're running the society, this corporatocracy. They're keeping native and white in subjugation. What do we do about it? Let's get on to that a little bit.
Well, I think a big part is we have to do the research to find out every connection that we can between the church, the churches in Canada, and the Canadian government, and also between the properties that the churches own and the Canadian government, and any monies that go from the Canadian government to the churches. And we also have to have an alternative to what we've got here. We can't just be hammering what the present status quo is. We have to have an alternative, and I think if you look at websites like directdemocracyschool.ca, I think it is, it might be .com, and these people are working diligently right now, setting up groups in various provinces to have a direct democracy, because having party system, a party is a corporate structure, just like the church.
Yep.
And so what that means is it can only serve one master. It can't say, "Well, we're going to help the people, and we're going to get elected." At some point, they're going to have to decide what's the main function. That's the problem with commercial corporations, is their main function by law, and this is the charter we've given them. Their main function by law is to make a profit at every opportunity. And if a CEO makes a mistake or willfully avoids a particular action to get a profit because maybe he didn't want to spoil a particular environment or harm some people, he can easily be turfed out by the shareholders at their annual general meeting. So it's our structure of the corporation that we charter that's part of the problem. And so when it comes down to changing democracy, we have to get rid of parties because eventually, and soon as possible, because parties are corporate hierarchical structures.
Well, not only that, they're funded right out of... I remember when I was in Italy, one of the senators there described how every political party in the world receives Vatican funds. That's a fact. He showed me even some evidence of that, all through Italy and all through Europe, and in America especially.
Well,
you know, so I mean, I think we all have a sense of this intuitively. And going back, one thing I wanted to mention, Bob, like in the book, before we move on from the book, one of the things I talk about in there is this: the only logging company in the Clackamas Sound logging off the last of the old-growth forest is 100% native-owned. It's called Lissac Limited. It was set up as part of the deal. The Housed Band councillors stabbed their own elder in the back, Earl McQuinnon George, and went around him, because he was traditional defender of the land, my friend Earl. And they isolated him, made a deal with the government that, yes, you can come in here with Weyerhaeuser and log off the land. We just want to share a piece of the action. So they formed this Lissac Limited. It originally was joint venture with Weyerhaeuser, 50-50. Then they, just a few years ago, they turned off over full shares, full control to the House of Bank Council. And, you know, like the Atleos, like Sean Atleo, he was head of the Assembly of First Nations. He's from that Housed clique that are now logging off the old growth forest. And, I mean, you know, I think they call it redwashing, where you put an Indian on the board of directors, and then environmentalists don't want to, you know, stop that company's actions because they don't want to look anti-native. Well, the reality is, just like in the residential schools where the native kids were ratting out each other and got benefits for doing so, this is not a native versus white issue. It's a class issue. You know, the poor in every culture against these corporate people, whether they're native or white. So
it's a
thoughts on that. Yeah.
It's a direct result of what we'd call commercial assimilation. Because at some point, if you're in a capitalist environment, there is no other ideology, right? It's back to the idea of a corporation's mandate is to make money and make money only, regardless mm-hmm. of the cost. In a capitalist society, which the Housed people have now entered into, there is no middle ground. It's all about making the money and keeping things under your control, right? And
well, let's
so,
talk about creating that middle ground, creating alternatives, which is, of course, a big theme.
Well,
of
a co-op, for example.
Yep. Yep.
A co-op would be a perfect way for them to manage their forests and their land. And I want to throw something on the table. I didn't mention it to you before. It came up in a previous show I had on Altered Eagles on CHLY, an FM program I have out of central Vancouver Island. And it was an announcement by the federal government that they're going to turn over all Crown lands to First Nations people to manage them the way they see fit, and they will pay them to manage them.
Oh, but here's the thing, though, Bob. Here's the thing. Under the treaty process, all land is invested in the Crown. So all they're doing is shifting hats. They're still owning the land. They can
That's
say
what
them
I'm thinking.
They're going to manage
making,
it, but it's still owned by the Crown.
That's what I was thinking. They're bringing them in as employees. Right?
Yeah. Junior partners. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Weyerhaeuser did. Yeah.
Totally. I mean, it's such a stinky way to deal with what we would like to see as giving the situation back totally into the control of First Nations.
Yeah.
I mean, if they just turn the Crown land over and said, look, you can have it, we'll sign it over, and we'll pay you to maintain it. Because you know what? We almost burned out Fort McMurray a couple of years ago or so, and we're not good at managing these things. I don't think that's going to happen. Because what would happen right... Pardon me?
I think an Achilles heel of progressive white people in Canada is we think that because a native person is running the show, it's somehow going to be better. I remember.
Well, that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. Like, this book opened my eyes to that. I knew there were problems on some reservations more than others in the governance of our First Nations. I always default to that, sisters and brothers. I've talked to them myself, and they can't speak out on certain issues. It's hazardous. They might lose their housing. They might have all kinds of repercussions. So when I read your
lose
book,
their lives.
Though, yep. Pardon me? Or their
lose
lives.
Their lives. I've known
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I know. And, yep. And you know, the idea of justice on the reserve is something that's becoming painfully obvious is not really available to many people on reserve. They're caught in between two cultures now. They don't have their original culture, and they aren't properly brought in and protected by the present culture. So they're vulnerable, just like they were before. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's not much of an improvement at all. So for sure, when we build this new system, First Nations people have to be front and center at the table, and they have to be willing to accept the system that we start putting into place. And it will never be a turnkey system. We don't want to. Like the phrase eternal vigilance, when you have a democratic system, you can never turn your back on it. There's always going to be somebody who wants to get a special slice of the pie for themselves or their group. And they're quite adept at doing that if they have the cash, the resources to do it. So it's eternal vigilance. So when we start building this system, we're building it from the ground up, and it'll be like distributed processing of computers, the internet. Why did the internet come about? It was a project of the Advanced Army Technology Group, ARPA. DARPA is what it was, Defense Advanced Research Army, I think is what it was called. DARPA in the late 60s, early 60s. And the reason was because they saw that if all the computers were in one or two major cities, if there were a nuclear hit on one of those cities, then they would lose control of their nuclear arsenal and their communications. So then they started building this network. And that's what we have to do when we build a proper functional democracy as well. You can't lean on somebody and pressure them because they turn to their colleagues and say, look, you know, I'm getting some feedback that's not healthy and it's not supportive, so I'm going to have to put this on the table that we have to address it.
Well, let's move on to that, too. And one thing I wanted to mention, too, is there's been stuff in the news recently about Chinese involvement in BC, and it's often cloaked, of course. We don't even know the extent of it, but a few years ago, you mentioned Harper. The Harper government brought in a thing called the Foreign Investment Protection Act and FIPA. Now, in FIPA, Article 33.5 A and B, it says that nothing in this agreement between Canada and China shall be construed to require a contracting party to furnish or allow access to any information, or to prevent that party from taking any actions it considers necessary for the protection of its essential security interests, including relating to traffic in arms, etc. What that means is that China can take any measures it wants in British Columbia to protect its investments. So in other words, the stationing of troops and security forces as well. That is an act of treason, Bob. And Trudeau has done nothing. In fact, he's increased that Chinese involvement in Canada and investment. So let's talk about that. We're talking about a government who is allowing foreign troops to be brought in, occupying our soil, and using whatever force. Are they going to be shooting demonstrators in next, Chinese soldiers? What?
Well, we may not know, actually, because the hinterland is so broad, people just disappear, right?
That's
exactly what's going on. It's partly related to Site C Dam. It's the largest project in BC, and it's a project that doesn't have a clear reason for being. Energy prices are going down. Dam prices are high. They're super high. They're usually 80% on average over budget. And the major construction company on it, Aecon, which is a big Canadian construction conglomerate, they built the CN Tower, I believe, and several other huge projects. They've applied to have a Chinese national government company buy their company, and it's in front of Trudeau now and the government to approve it or not. And this is what you're referring to, is that once you lock in a foreign country into a project like Site C Dam, if we kill the project, then what are the ramifications for that? Because of the international trade agreements that we don't know about.
Yep.
And the other thing that is quite common in these agreements, and I haven't pulled it out of the FIPA agreement yet, but I don't think any of these modern so-called trade agreements, which are corporate rights agreements, I don't think any of them do not have the investor-state dispute resolution mechanism, which is Chapter 11 in NAFTA. And what that means is if there's an argument because, for example, we cancel Site C after the Chinese construction company have bought into it. They think they're going to get paid a bunch of money. And you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if it would become very quickly a P3, public-private partnership, so that we're stuck with the Chinese on the dam even after construction. But let's just leave that off the table and think about, for example, we cancel the dam while the Chinese company, which is a national government company, could sue the British Columbia government for a lost benefit on that. And it would be in a private tribunal that would not be public knowledge. Nobody of a taxpayer would know about it. We don't have a sitting in this. These people are not jurists. They're economists, super highly paid economists, three of them. And so one party chooses one, the other party chooses the second, and the two jointly choose the third. This is extrajudiciary. Yeah. There's no input that we have through our legal system, common law,
right,
at all.
Like a church court or something.
But this is also a violation of our charter, because you cannot take contract out the governance of Canada. And that's essentially what's going on here, because these companies sue governments for alleged, not even factual yet, lost profits, right? For example, the gasoline additive was harmful. It was produced, I think, in Quebec or Ontario about 10 years ago. And I think it was an American group didn't want it imported and put into the gasoline. And they took the country or the company government at the time to court, and they won. Well, the court is this tribunal I'm talking about. It almost always ends up in favor of the corporations. And this is a huge
what you're describing,
risk.
Bob, what you're describing is an exact, when we say the corporatocracy, how it's taken over and suppressing democracy at every level, this is exactly what we're witnessing. We live in a corporatocracy now. There is no rule of law. So I say to people, why do you then hold allegiance to a system that is screwing you at every level? We need to create the rule of law again. We need to create common law courts, people's assemblies, where we reestablish democracy on the ground, like you've talked about. So let's talk a little bit about that. We have about just over 10 minutes left, unfortunately. But let's talk about what that might look like. The idea of, say, convening a West Coast grand jury or in people's investigation of all these things that have the power to lay charges, for example.
It would begin with knowledge of the problem. I always say my background is medical electronics technology, and I learned over and over again, the most important thing is knowing the problem clearly. And I would say knowing the problem is half the solution. And so we have to understand what the problems are right now. And they're all pretty common. As you say, it's a corporatocracy. It's a neo-fascist state, highly dangerous neo-fascist state. We bombed Libya, and hardly any Canadians knew about it, right? Mm-hmm. Our House of Commons, 300-plus trained SEALs, gave standing ovations to another war criminal, Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel. Like, come on, how many Canadians? I think it's like 68% of Canadians would never have accepted that being done. How the hell did it happen? So what we have to tell people is where the problems are. We do not have a democracy. When we vote in somebody like Trudeau, and he makes the most important promise during his campaign trail in 2015 to change the electoral system, and then changes his mind after he's elected, and we can't fire him. Well, you know right away you're not in control. Yeah. And because that was a no-cost option, and it was the most important offering during a campaign in Canadian political history, I allege, that is an unacceptable lie, and it's the straw that should break the back of every Canadian's allegiance to this dysfunctional neo-fascist corporate country we've got.
Well, like so, I say, just read their oath of allegiance, and it says it all there. They're not accountable.
I wanted to add one thing to that part, because there's another section that goes with it, and that is this: swearing secrecy on the issues that take place in the Queen's Privy Council, right?
Yeah.
The Queen's Privy Council is not made up of elected individuals. Some are, but a lot of them are corporatists, and they are advising in secret what this government is to do.
Well,
and Trudeau and all the other MPs swear to keep all that material secret from us.
It's secret government, and it always has been. That's the point. Three-quarters of the laws in Canada are passed in council, order in council, not even debated in Parliament.
Well, this
so,
is neo-colonialism.
People don't know these things. It's the old colonial system.
And once we nail several things, like the Romans had the adage that no real change takes place until it's your ox that's gored. Well, with the potential to ship bitumen diluted on the coast here, I would say many people are feeling their ox. The beauty and the pristine nature of Pacific coastal lands is now in enormous jeopardy. And so they're rising. They know that problem. They know the problem of bankruptcy through BC Hydro and Site C Dam. So we have some really opportune moments, this very painful moment when we see our gored and dying favorite ox, perhaps our only ox on the ground, bleeding out. Now it's time to say, we got to change this system. And once you get that motivation, then everything else starts to look like it's a downhill run, right? Sure, our eyes will glaze over at the various steps of it, but you know what? It's like anything anybody does, any technology that's been invented in our human species, it's a step and a building point upon what was done by others before us.
Right.
People who build computers don't necessarily know every bit from one end to the other. They know a section of it. They know the communications. They know the power supply.
Wasn't it you who mentioned, Bob, there was 700 fracking sites in British Columbia?
Yes, over 700.
I mean, it's insane.
And they're leaking like hell, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is an example. So in the last few minutes, let's talk about, during the summer and fall, it's been talked, the idea of all over now is coming from different people that we should convene some kind of citizens' inquiry. What do you think should be on the agenda of that inquiry?
Well, are we inquiring on the dysfunction of our governance? What is it that we're inquiring on? Because if that's, like, we need
that's
to, the language of what the subject is always the most important part. It's like the identification in text form of what the problems are. And I would say we would have to call people together to say what's happening. And part of it is this Christian issue of our history and what's going ahead. It's the bombing of Libya, that we are actually a rogue nation. And when we vote, we are actually committing a criminal act. And it's starting to sink in. The people at Direct Democracy, My Freedom 2017 is another one of their sites. You want to go there? These are really active people coming out of Ontario. They're building across not just Canada. They've got some people in Australia, New Zealand, and in Europe working on this because
it's paralleling the common law movement very much. The common law court movement is walking in parallel lines but towards the same goal very much.
Sure, and we all, as a species, want the same outcome, essentially. This is the crazy thing. Mm-hmm. And telecommunications, instead of completely enslaving us, I mean, it isn't solving all our problems, but it's also giving us a huge opportunity. Facebook, even though it's monitored, et cetera, people realize I'm not alone. Even though I don't know all my neighbors, even the ones in my apartment block. Don't forget, Canada is the most urbanized country in the world, in the developed world, with 84% of Canadians living in an urban area, right? No wonder we're having trouble protecting the hinterlands. Nobody's getting out there to appreciate
them.
Nobody
knows what's going on. And yet speaking of that, one of the issues having to do with the missing families, I don't mean just missing Aboriginal women, whole families going missing in northern BC along the Highway of Tears. Rumors that Chinese people have been involved in disappearing these native families to get them off their land, that's something that's got to be investigated on the ground.
Well, the First Nations up there are totally aware of it. They're saying no more of these, they call them man camps, right? Because statistically, as soon as one of these 800, 500, 1,000 person man camp gets built up, and they have a ratio of 3 or 4 men for every woman in the camps, then immediately drunkenness and harassment of women, First Nations women, and other problems start to take place. Prostitution starts to become evident because these guys have so much money and no place to spend it, right?
I think the point is, Bob, that it's not only that, which is always a problem, but it's concerted, it's death squads at work. Like, they have been up there all the time. And, you know, knocking off the traditional women who have title to the land and that kind of thing.
That is an inside job. I allege that those are definitely agents of the Crown that are involved with that. And some of that will be coming out in a forthcoming book of my own.
Oh, good. Well, Bob, in the last 2 minutes, I want you to announce anything you want to, websites, your own program. Go for it, because we only got 2 minutes left before
Excellent.
I got to do
some. Well, I thank you again for having me on your show.
Oh, we'll do it again.
You bet. Let's do that. And I would like to read some of your other books, and we can talk about those. Maybe you'd come on my program. It's Altered Egos at CHLY 101.7 FM, coming out of Central Vancouver Island, Nanaimo. It's a campus community FM station. It's independent. It's run by volunteers and largely funded by probably 60% of the funding comes from the students at Vancouver Island University here in Nanaimo. And the show is also live streamed, as all shows are, on CHLY at www.chly.ca. It airs from 10 in the morning till noon on Saturdays. It's an activist radio news magazine coming from the heart of unceded Coast Salish territories, and that's how the show rolls. It's hard-hitting. I think almost every episode I call the Prime Minister a liar, because even though other Prime Ministers have broken promises, like I said, the one that Trudeau broke is the cheapest one of all and the most meaningful one, and he just washed it off. So time's up. There's no more of this bullshit. Time is running out, people. We need to get a hold of our governance system before we find ourselves without any tools to do that.
All right. Bob, thank you. It's brilliant. It's been a great show, and we're going to do it again soon. Thank you, Bob,
excellent,
for being
my
on
pleasure
with us today.
Take care. Keep up the good work, Kevin. Take care.
Okay. Thanks,
bye-bye.
Bob. That's Bob Hansen from Nanaimo calling in. We'll have him on again soon. The book he was referring to and which we discussed today is At the Mouth of a Cannon, Conquest and Cupidity on Canada's West Coast, a personal account by yours truly, Kevin Annett. You can get that at Amazon.com. Go to itccs.org for more information on that. Also, a final announcement today for the folks who are active in Operation Atonement, an attempt to shut down the Catholic, Anglican, United churches in Canada and everywhere in the world. There are actions being planned, Good Friday actions, church occupations that are going to be happening in Vancouver, in Dublin, in Rome, and Philadelphia. Here's some other dates to keep in mind. Operation Atonement officially begins April 15th. There'll be direct actions at Catholic churches, especially in New York City, Philadelphia, Rome, London, and Vancouver. April 20th in Paris, April 23rd, a network is forming in the southern Netherlands to coordinate actions against child trafficking networks in the Ninth Circle. That's April 23rd. April 27th to 29th in Dublin, and May 12th to 15th in Italy, including the Heart of the Beast right in Rome. So if you want more information, if you're listening to this in any of those areas, write to itccsoffice@gmail.com. They'll connect you with the local conveners and organizers. That's itccsoffice@gmail.com. Follow our work, especially a lot of the stuff we talked about today is documented in my book, Murder by Decree, The Crime of Genocide in Canada. It's online, murderbydecree.com. You can also get it, of course, at amazon.com, along with my 8 other books I've written in the last 2 years. I often say, well, you know, you never know how much longer you have, so it's important to get all this stuff down in writing for future generations. So we need to get those books into the libraries, folks, including the Common Law Training Manual, the Whistleblower's Manual, the practical help we can give folks on the ground now who are struggling. And finally, since we talked about Nanaimo, I wanted to send out especially greetings to a lot of my former parishioners and other activists in the Port Alberni area. You've been writing to us recently, wanting to get involved, and it does my heart good to know that going, you know, to the scene of the crime there, which I will again one day, possibly during the summer or fall, it's important to remember those children still in the ground who were killed, because that wasn't dealt with. And we allowed the perpetrators in the churches to get away with it. It's going to happen again tomorrow, and it is happening as we speak. So for all the children, this is why we fight for them, because it's our future. And until next week, write to me, thecommonland@gmail.com. I will write you back. I know we've been getting a lot of invitations and offers to come and speak. Don't have enough days in the week, folks, but we have lots more people working in the network now, so I can connect you with local organizers. Just write to me, thecommonland@gmail.com, itccsoffice@gmail.com if you want to get involved in any of those actions that were announced all over the world, all over Europe and North America. And so we will be back next week again, folks. Stay strong, stay clear, and until then, carry it on. Thank you.